The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now we know the price of food staples. Those prices are continuing to rise. So with grocery inflation only going one way, is there anything consumers can do to get better value? Our chief reporter, Barry White, is with me. Barry, you've been looking at this. So are people doing various things? I mean, they can go to the German multiples or they can go north of the border.
Hi, Pat. Good morning. Yeah, look, I think many people now have no choice but to search for value when they are doing their grocery shopping. According to July inflation figures from the Central Statistics Office, food prices are surging three times faster than general inflation. And figures show that the cost of fish, meats, milk, butter and cheese have surged in the last year. And I'll give you some examples, Pat. Cod fillets are now almost €5 more expensive per kilo than they were a year ago. Diced beef prices have jumped a similar percentage. Butter has also jumped up and is fast approaching that important €5 mark. 2 litres of full fat milk now costs almost €2.50. That's a rise of 28% since last year. While cheddar cheese has shot up by 24% in a year. So with these continuing increases, more and more consumers are shopping around. And these shoppers in Dundalk told me that instead of doing one big shop in, say, Dunnes, Tesco, Lidl or Aldi, they are now going around two or three places to try and get the best deals.
Definitely has gone up. I noticed a big increase, especially in meat, bread, all the essentials, milk. Definitely, I'm spending €30 more on my shopping per week at the minute. I'm going from Tesco's to Aldi's to, I'm going around the mall.
So you're trying to shop around to save?
Yeah, and everywhere has gone up.
Have you had to cut back at anything because your shopping bill?
I've cut back on meat big time. It's chicken mostly now. Frozen vegetables rather than fresh vegetables, although I have a few fresh things here. But no, mostly frozen because it's cheaper.
The shoppers feel like they're getting ripped off?
I think so, yeah. Every time I talk to somebody about the grocery shopping, everybody has the same opinion, yeah.
And the CCP sees that there's no evidence of price gouging. Do you believe that?
No. Things have definitely gone up, definitely. A jar of coffee that lasts about a week in the house, €8. So, no, I don't believe that for a minute. People are definitely struggling big time.
I suppose here in Dundalk, you're closer to the border. Would you ever go across the border to try?
No, I used to do that, but not anymore. I try and stay local, and I feel sorry for the smaller shops. You know, I would have always gone to the local fruit and veg shop, but now it's just too dear.
It's gone up at least 25%. Most definitely 25%. It's small things. It's small rises constant, you know, that you notice.
And is that, certain items you go on and they seem to go up 10, 20, 30 cents nearly every time?
All the time, yeah. I pity people with a big family and trying to cope, you know.
And they said yesterday that people aren't being ripped off, there isn't price gouging. Like, I'm speaking to loads of shoppers today and everybody's saying the same. They don't believe that?
No.
Do you think there is?
There definitely is. There definitely is. Any of the supermarkets, it doesn't matter whether it's Aldi, Lidl, Tesco, Dunnes, you know, they're all the same. And they're all going up.
Look, Dundalk is close to the border here. Would you ever go up across the border to the north to make savings? Or is it the same there? The prices are going up there too?
Well, they probably are. I go down very seldom, go over the border, but if you're down, you get your few bits the same, you know.
So, Barry, you asked those shoppers, do they ever go across the border to the north to find better value? You've actually been looking into it in terms of the nitty-gritty. Is it much cheaper in the north?
Yeah, Pat, so I compiled a shopping list of 26 items, including things like milk, eggs, bread, chicken, beef mince, pasta, vegetables, toothpaste, shower gel, nappies, baby formula, washing up powder, items that you'd likely find in your average family's weekly shop. And I added in one or two luxury items, like a bottle of Prosecco and an 18-pack of Coke Zero. And there was a considerable difference. So, for example, my shopping list came to a total of €155 in Dunnes stores. In Tesco, the same items just was above €150. Now, Dunnes do their money off vouchers. So when you spend over €50, you do get €10 off, but you have to use it within 10 days. So if you shop there regularly, you will get a bit off that €155. While if you have a Tesco club card, you can also make some savings. However, even with the savings, Pat, it was still cheaper in Asda in the north. The total of our shopping list there came to €107.54.
Wow, €50 the difference.
Yeah, €50. And that's using an exchange rate of £1 sterling being equal to €1.15. So you are saving, I said you're saving around €40 because you can use the voucher obviously in Dunn. So we'll say 40. And even then, if you pay for your fuel, you're still going to be making savings there. So while I was in Uri, I met Nedco, quite the character. He lives in Stillorgan, but he travels north twice a month. And he told me he's making huge savings.
For the shopping today, probably I've saved around €500. So it's worth coming.
How have you saved so much? What are you buying?
I buy lots of soft drinks, wine. From the soft drinks and the wine, it's a big difference.
So huge savings.
Huge for me.
Is this something you do regularly?
Twice a month.
So how much do you find you're saving then?
If I save €1,000, that's a lot.
And you're travelling from?
From Dublin.
And even when you add in the price of fuel?
Fuel is about €40.
So even with that, you're still saving?
For me, yeah. For me personally, big savings.
What do you make of the prices now with grocery inflation and inflation across the board?
I think, honestly, I think in Dublin they're speculating. That's what I think. They push it as much as they can.
Supermarkets are profiteering?
That's what I think, honestly. Yeah. How do you explain, how is that £9 here and €15 in Dublin, even with the... in Sainsbury's, not like a cheap shop, you know.
No, you're doing your shopping in Sainsbury's, yeah. Which is normally seen as expensive.
Yeah.
But even in there, you're getting, you're making savings.
Yeah, even Sainsbury's is cheaper than the cheapest in Dublin.
And are you telling your friends, family to do
everyone,
the same?
I'm telling everyone I know.
Yeah. And are they listening? Are they coming up here now as well?
No, nobody's coming up. None of my friends, anyway. They're not bothered.
So, Barry, that man you spoke to, what exactly was he buying?
Well, he was buying soft drinks, lots of Coke Zero, which is on average about 50% cheaper. Huge savings to be made there. He was also buying some alcohol, which does seem to be much cheaper. I was just saying to you, Pat, I know of one-off license in Strabane that's Euro equals pound. And I would say 60-70% of their customers are people coming across the border. But yeah, look, there wasn't a huge difference in meat, milk, cheese and butter. Maybe a few cent cheaper. But items like nappies, baby formula, shower gel and washing up powder were much cheaper. I'll give you an example. Washing up powder was €1 cheaper in the north. But for the same product you got here, it was 45 washes. The same product you get for €1 cheaper in the north was 75 washes.
Wow. Now, the cross-border shopper you spoke to said he's telling his friend it's a lot cheaper. This is Nedco. But he said they're not bothered coming up. So is there an influx of people going across the border like we used to see?
Well, I think those who live closer to the border will certainly go across and find value. But if you live in Cork, Kerry, Waterford, Wexford or so on, you aren't going to drive up north because you wouldn't make any. Well, you might make some savings, but
you've got the tedium, your time.
Time consuming.
Yeah, your time and the fuel costs and the tedium of the whole thing.
Yeah, that's it. But like I say, Pat, certain items are cheaper. For example, I spoke to a number of people who travelled across the border from Dublin to do their back-to-school shopping. Items like school shoes, etc. are a lot cheaper. And I have to say, I did notice a lot of Louth and Dublin car registrations in Uri. And Pete Murray, who manages the Buttercrane Shopping Centre, says they've noticed an influx of cross-border shopping, particularly in the last month or so.
Uri's, we're 6 miles from the border, so Southern Ireland is part of our natural hinterland. And in fairness, we've always had Irish shoppers come north. It's ebbed and flowed over the years as, you know, different exchange rate comparisons have come into effect. It varies from time to time during the year. Summer months like now, a lot of people are off on holidays, they're maybe staycationing, they're maybe in the Mourns or in Carlingford, and they come on to Newry to do a bit of retail tourism. A lot of it is down to, I suppose, the retail offer that's in Newry, but certainly price comparison is a factor. Has been, and I guess always will be, with exchange rate, so it's different costs of doing business, different levels of taxation in some regard. And yes, we have seen an increase in southern visitors. The southern visitor tends to travel a bit further, obviously, to get to Newry, stay a bit longer, and then spend some more money. So they're a very important element to doing business in Newry.
Would you have any idea of what percentage of your shoppers are coming from south of the border?
Well, we do. We monitor car registration, so it's easy to separate it out that way. So generally speaking, it's around about 20% of our vehicular traffic comes from Ireland as opposed to locals.
And that's Pete Murray, who manages the Buttercrane Shopping Centre in Newry. So, Barry, do you think we're going to see cross-border shopping increase more as people are more sensitive to what seems to be food inflation particularly?
Well, Pat, cross-border shopping has always really depended on the strength of the euro. When the euro is close to the value of the pound, there is huge savings to be made. And I'm just looking at my phone. At the minute, the euro gets you 86p. So obviously, that's a factor. But I did notice that anytime I go up home, I do notice in Strabane and Derry, there's always shops that offer euro equals pound. So those types of places is where you're going to make huge savings. And I think for people, like I say, living close to the border, they'll continue to cross the border in search of value. But for those living further away, I just don't think it's practical. And look, grocery inflation has hit the north too. Prices there are also continuing to go up and are rising at a similar pace compared to here. And the economist Austin Hughes says the savings to be made with cross-border shopping are never certain. And the only thing that is certain is that grocery inflation across the board is here to stay.
Well, food prices have been rising about as fast across the north and the UK as they have been in Ireland. And the recent report on the grocery sector finds that Irish food price inflation has been a little lower than EU food price inflation in recent years. But there are definitely probably areas of savings. So, you know, it really depends what you're buying and how much you're spending on petrol crossing the border. It may well be that for particular items, you will save. But again, there's also an issue that perhaps with prices rising very fast at the moment, it may well be that you save this week and next week it costs you more. There's no guarantee you're going to make dramatic savings by travelling to the north at the moment.
And I suppose, Austin, that big question that all shoppers want to know is, are prices going to come down anytime soon?
I think, you know, economists can be definitive about this. Prices aren't going to come down anytime soon. You still have high energy costs. You have the drop in the cattle herd here. You have issues like climate change. All of these mean that food prices are kind of almost inevitably going to remain high and probably continue to rise fairly fast, maybe in the years ahead, barring some extraordinary recession that hits the economy that causes all sorts of prices to tumble. I think we're looking at higher prices and rising prices for the future.
Interesting stuff coming in, Barry. The report from Barry White, our chief reporter. Since COVID, I've been going to my local butcher. I also purchase whole chicken and break it down myself. Much better value. I can also make my own stock, says James in Dublin. I live in Cooley. I go to Newry for my dry cat food. Half the price than in the south. And yet, the wet cat food is more expensive. When you increase costs like we did, minimum wage, etc., what can you expect? It causes an increase in production costs and the cost of wages in shops, and it makes it therefore more expensive for the consumer. So,
yeah, and actually one thing I noticed when I was speaking to people from Newry, they were saying they're really feeling it because wages are a lot lower there and inflation has went up similarly to here by 27% in 4 years. So they're probably finding it tough as us, maybe not tougher because of the low wages.
Barry, thank you very much. Now, a reminder once again of our competition. As part of the Great Aviva Road Trip, our show sponsors Aviva are sending a family of four around the country on a road trip so they can encourage us all to take to the road and experience the attractions that Ireland has to offer. So Chelsea Harrington's family have reached Donegal and will be enjoying the wild alpaca way today. Our competition prize could help you with some really nice places to stay on your own motoring adventure. You can get on the road today with Aviva Car Insurance. Check it out at Aviva. canada.ie. So the prize today, a Blue Book voucher worth €1,400 for one of our listeners. This week, we're testing your car knowledge, but instead of identifying the car Jeremy Clarkson is talking about here, we want you to identify the person.
What sort of a moron would buy a car as dreadful and as dreary as a Fiat Panda? You'd have to be a woolly-headed oaf with a wardrobe full of stupid stripy jumpers and idiotic floral shirts, and at night you'd drone on and on in front of your friends about gravity and maths and steam locomotives, and then you'd explain that pencil sharpeners are interesting.
Well, if you know who Jeremy Clarkson was talking about, text the word TRIP with your answer and name to us now on 53106 at a cost of 30 cent.
Bob Hilliard was a Church of Ireland pastor. From Killarney across the Pyrenees he came. From Derry came a brave young Christian brother. Side by side they fought and died in Spain.
Christy Moore singing Viva la Quinta Brigada from the 1984 album Ride On, and the fascinating life and untimely death of Robert Hilliard, Bob Hilliard in the song, is the subject of a new book, Swift Blaze of Fire, by his granddaughter Lynn Rose Clark. As well as a folk hero, Hilliard was one of Ireland's first Olympians, and a complicated figure to say the least. And to tell us more about Bob Hilliard, Cameron Hill from Off the Ball. Cameron, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
I'm very well. Where was he from?
New Street, Killarney, in County Kerry. So was born on the 7th of April, 1904, to Robert Martin Hilliard, also Robert Martin, who ran a footwear factory with his brother, John. Now, it seems as though Robert Martin Sr. really wanted to give the younger Robert as many opportunities as possible, the opportunities he didn't get, and made a great deal of sacrifices to give him the proper education. So young Robert is sent to Middleton College in 1915. He leaves after one term and then moves to Cork Grammar School, then goes to the Mountjoy School in Dublin for 1 year, really cracks the books, and manages to gain a Reed Sizership to Trinity College.
What does that mean?
So it was granted to students of limited means, receiving free evening meals in exchange for the performance of certain duties. You tend to really only find it at Trinity and the University of Cambridge. The award still exists today in some form, known as the Reed Entrance Exhibition. It is open only to students of limited means who are natives of County Kerry.
Now, Trinity was important because he learned to do a couple of things.
Two really important activities: debating. So he was a frequent speaker at these debates at the Historical Society in Trinity, which really informs his politics, which I'll leave a pin in and come back to because it is important later in the story. Boxing caught his attention in 1922. So he won the Trinity Boxing Club's novices competition in the bantamweight division. Years of playing rugby in Cork Grammar School and other places had steeled him for combat sport, gave him a love of physicality and endurance.
Clark also, he would have been small enough now if he was a bantamweight fighter. He would have been a small man.
Yeah, a little scrapper, you might say.
Yeah.
And as Clark notes, boxing really appeals to his urge to live on the edge, which we will see more of later in his story. But he spent most of his time in the boxing gym, managed to sign up for the Trinity Hurling Club, which again, key identifier of his Republican leanings at this time. And the fact that he couldn't go down to Kerry during this period, so this is around 1922-23, during the Irish Civil War, cut off the rail network between Dublin and Kerry. So he was stuck up in Dublin and he only had really boxing to do, yeah. Boxing and debating. So it meant he could really hone his craft.
Now, the Olympics were beckoning in 1924 in Paris.
Yes, and it was to be the first Olympics that Ireland would fully take part in. So you remember from last week, there was an Irish team sent to 1906, yeah. But this was the first team of the Irish Free State in Paris, 1924, and Hilliard wanted to make the boxing team. So the IABA championships were down for June of that year at Portobello Barracks and served effectively as trials for the Olympic team. He was up against his chief rival, Daniel Flaherty, for the bantamweight place. A member of the Volunteers fought him on June 6th, and he won that match. It was a particularly prolific period for Hilliard. In a very short space of time, so in 10 days, he fought 8 times, won 6, picked up two titles, and gained a place on the Olympic team. It ended up making him rather shattered by the end of that period, but he would then lose to Flaherty later that month at a charity event. So it probably did catch up with him eventually.
Now, you mentioned his biographer, his granddaughter, Lynn Rose Clark, and you've been talking to her.
Yes, and she was explaining how Her grandfather's growing interest in boxing at that time coincided nicely with the Irish public seeing this sport as a great unifier in the early days of independence.
His rise as a boxer was meteoric, and I think he did enjoy that. He was very, very competitive, and he was an entertainer. He was a performer, and so he was a popular figure in the ring, which, you know, of course, he just loved. He had a tremendous sense of humour, and he would take this smiling, jokey, charismatic air into the boxing ring. So there's one match which is described in the book where it says that, you know, he and his opponent were the stars of the show. And I can sort of well believe it from the newspaper reports. The newspaper articles are very interesting, and the press was absolutely glued to this huge upsurge of interest in boxing in Ireland that happened after 1922. It's very much part of establishing a new national identity. And they were determined that there's going to be this Olympic team that would be cross-sectarian, that would be cross-border, that would be very, very inclusive, and that would also be a marker of Irish excellence.
Now, he did go to the Olympics. How did he do?
Well, not very well. So just an overview of Ireland's Olympics, first Olympics, 44 nations competing in Paris that year, the biggest Olympics so far. John O'Grady was the flag bearer, a weight thrower who stood at 6'4" and over 18 stone with a 54-inch chest, nicknamed the Baby. America's Johnny Weissmuller, who later played Tarzan, and you'll remember was a friend of Mysterious Montague when we did that episode. He won 4 medals in swimming. Ireland's first ever international football match took place there when they played Bulgaria and won 1-0 before losing to the Netherlands in the quarterfinals. And things like the Olympic Village and the release of doves at the opening ceremony, that was the first time they had appeared in an Olympics. The Irish boxing team fairly swiftly wiped out. All pretty close, maybe contentious decisions. So Morris Doyle was the featherweight. He was beaten by 16-year-old American Jacob Finkelstein, known as Jackie Fields, who won the gold. He's still the youngest ever boxing gold medalist at an Olympics. John Pat Kelleher was lightweight. He lost to Ben Rothwell of the US. Willie Boy Murphy fared better. He received a bye into the round of 32, beat Eugenius Novak of Poland in the last 16, lost to Canadian Leslie Black in what the Irish Independent described as an outrageous decision. Paddy Dwyer came closest to a medal. He beat Britain's James Basham in the round of 32, reached the bronze final where he lost to Canada's Douglas Lewis.
And Hilliard?
He lost in the last 16 to Argentina's Benito Pertuzzo.
Now, after his Olympic adventures, he meets a woman.
It's around this time, actually, when he's starting to make a play for the Olympic team that he meets a woman named Rosemary Robbins, a somewhat shy and rather religious young woman, according to Clark's book, at a dinner party in Merrion Square. So after the Olympics ends, Hilliard gets on a train from Gare du Nord at the crack of dawn, and by dusk that same day, he reaches Rosemary's house in Gomshall in Surrey and camps in a tent outside. His aunt sees this strange individual camping outside their house and invites him in, and that's where the love really kindles. Drops out of his degree, much to the disappointment of his father, starts visiting Rosemary every weekend. Rosemary then becomes pregnant, which was apparently very distressing for both of them, and he married her in something of a shotgun wedding. And Hilliard had originally been working as a copywriter before moving to journalism, neither of which paid very well. They were suffering from serious financial problems when he resolved to become a Church of Ireland minister after a meeting with the leader of the Oxford Group, which was a sect of Anglicanism with a focus on personal spirituality and a rejection of fear and selfishness. So he goes back to Trinity, gets his BA in Divinity, and does a bit of boxing on the side as well.
Now, he goes to Derriahy, just outside Belfast. So he's still, it's not a well-paid job. He's still struggling.
Yeah, it's one of the poorer Protestant parishes in Northern Ireland, and the financial struggles continue, which is such a shame because Clark, in the book and when she was speaking to me, said that he was a very lively and entertaining preacher and minister, and he then gets a full-time post at St. Anne's Cathedral in Belfast. But in 1934, when he's really deep in debt, he's refused a loan from the cathedral's dean, and that marks a change. It is a life-changing moment.
Now, we mentioned that he was anti-treaty, and, you know, why does he end up in a Christy Moore song?
So during the Irish Civil War, he was anti-treaty, as you say. He took part in Fianna Fáil debates throughout his college career and up until this point. But then he witnesses something really interesting. The outdoor relief strikes of 1932 in Belfast, where members of the working class from across the sectarian divide united together to march for welfare reforms and a fair living wage. And he's pretty taken aback by this. It marks a real shift in his politics towards the left. And in 1935, he moves to London, leaving Rosemary and their children behind, and becomes an active member of the Communist Party. When civil war breaks out in Spain in July of the following year, 1936, I should say, in December, he heads off to fight with the international brigades, which are forming to fight the fascist-backed Francoist forces. And he sends a very interesting postcard to Rosemary at this time. Very poignant. "I still hate fighting," which, as a boxer, I kind of... I'm a little bit reluctant to believe, "but this time it's got to be done. Unless we end fascism in Spain and in the world, it will be war and hell for our kids." So there was a real philanthropic giving man here. He was very fond of his children and wanted a better future for them, and that's what prompted him to go over to Spain and fight.
What happened to him?
Part of the British battalion in the 5th International Brigade, as Christy Moore sings in the song, formed at Madrigueras in Albacete. So on the 14th of February 1937, the British battalion members were rallying to keep Francoist forces from cutting off the road between Madrid and Valencia at Jarama. Hilliard, who was only one of 125 riflemen to survive the first day of fighting, is shot in the neck. Now, we don't know precisely when or how that happened. He's brought to a hospital in Castellón, and Robert Hilliard dies on the 22nd of February, aged just 32.
So he is remembered in song at any rate, and now you've given us the background to his Olympic story as well. Lynn, his granddaughter, is going to be speaking, I believe.
Yes, on the 14th, in 14 Henrietta Street, as part of the Dublin Festival of History on September 29th, should be over. That book, Swift Blaze of Fire, definitely recommend anyone picking it up. It's available in Easons, Dubray Books, Hodges Figgis, Books Upstairs, and direct from lilliputpress.ie. But it's a great exploration of her relationship with her grandfather and the legacy of someone whose most famous moment comes at what was a really traumatic moment for their family, because he ups and leaves them to sort of fend off the creditors and fight their debts themselves. So that complication is a very interesting thread throughout that book.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.